Future Proof Extra from Newstalk.
If you look at the structure of an ant nest, you'll see a highly organized intelligence system. Look at the social structure of an ant colony and you'll see the same: order, efficiency, intelligence. Now look at an ant. 250,000 neurons makes up its entire nervous system. In terms of smarts, it's not far off a stick of chewing gum. So how does it manage to create such complex structures in its relationships and its environment? And how does it find new things to keep that building and intelligence going? Well, Deborah Gordon is professor in the Department of Biology at Stanford. She joins me now. Welcome to the program, Deborah.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
This is one of the great fascinations, isn't it? How orders, how chemicals and how microtransactions between ants can lead to such complex systems. Can you tell us a little bit about how ants get by and how they create and design these systems?
That's what fascinates me about ants, that such a messy system can work. Ants use very simple interactions that in the aggregate create the behavior of colonies. Most ants can't see. They operate by smell. They smell with their antennae. So when one ant touches another with its antennae, it's smelling the other ant. And they use the rate at which they meet and smell each other to decide what to do.
What does that mean? What does that look like?
Well, it looks like a network of ants all moving around and touching each other with their antennae or smelling the chemicals that they leave on the ground. And that adds up to the behavior of the colony. No ant understands what everybody else is doing, and no ant can make a global assessment of what needs to be done. But because their local interactions respond to changes in their surroundings, it adds up to allowing the colony to adjust to the way the world is changing around them.
Yeah, we spoke to Simon Garnier, who works in New Jersey, about the army ant a couple of years back, and it really struck me as a really simple explanation of how ants work. He was talking about army ants and how they build these quite impressive bridges. And he said an army ant only has three instructions. The first instruction is to keep walking. If you can't keep walking, you stop. And if you feel ants on top of your head, don't move. And if you stop feeling ants on top of your head, you can move again. And they were the basic instructions that allow these incredible structures to be made. And I'm wondering, is it really that simple? I mean, can the system of ants and ant colonies and ant social structures all be due to a few localized instructions?
I'm familiar with Simone's beautiful work, and I think that's a great description of the army ant process of building a bridge. But I would hesitate to call those rules instructions, because there is nobody instructing the ant. They're not giving each other directions, and there is no higher power giving them directions. So when we talk about rules, we really mean what are the key elements of the process that regulates their behavior. So let's talk about what regulates the collective foraging of a harvester ant colony. Harvester ants live in the desert. When a harvester ant goes out to forage, it loses water to evaporation because it's foraging in the hot desert sun. And they get their water by metabolizing the fats in the seeds that they eat. So they have to spend water to get water. They lose water searching and they get water from the seeds. And they manage this trade-off with very simple feedback. Every time a forager comes back from its last trip, it waits inside the nest. And it uses the rate at which it meets returning foragers with food to decide whether to go out again. And so this is a measure of food availability, even though no ant can measure that itself. Because the more food there is out there, the faster they find it, the more quickly they return, and the more go out. So it sets up a feedback that's based on the rate of interaction. And the rate of interaction is linked to the outside world, but nobody is measuring that. So this allows the colony to adjust to food availability using the rate of interaction without any kind of global assessment.
It sounds like you're talking about counting. Do we have any idea how that might be encoded in an ant's nervous system?
Yes, we'd like to understand how an ant actually assesses interaction rate. And we learned about this drawing on the analogy between ants and neurons. A neuron adds up its stimulation from other neurons to decide whether to fire. And it does that using electrical signals from the other neuron that leak as the signal travels down the long, string-like axon of the neuron. So in neurons, that's called leaky integration. And we found that ants do much the same thing. Each interaction, each encounter, each time one ant touches another with its antennae and smells it, stimulates some neurophysiological response that has a decay. And so if it gets enough interactions soon enough before the last one has decayed, then they add up, push it over the threshold, and it's ready to go out to forage. But if the last interaction has already decayed, it's as though the ant has forgotten anything ever happened, and the whole process starts again. So the ant doesn't have to count anything. It's just responding to the rate at which it meets other ants. And because each one has a decay, it adds up.
You're listening to Future Proof on News Talk. I'm Jonathan McRae. We're speaking with Deborah Gordon from Stanford about the secret lives of ants. So if ants only have a few rules to follow, and that's their programming from birth, then how does new things happen to a colony? How does it reach out into new areas? Why do they explore?
It's because the ants make mistakes or don't always do everything right that the colony can find new things and respond to the environment. So there has to be some noise or messiness or randomness in the system for it to work. So another way to see that is to think about the trail networks of ants. And I study a species in Mexico of arboreal ants that make trail networks in the trees. Well, the only way they can find anything is if every now and then some ants go off the trail to search. You could call that making a mistake. You could call that exploration. It's the same thing. It's taking the trail that's not reinforced, taking a path that other ants have not been on, and following that for a while. They need to do that. They need to do some kind of searching or exploration or error in order to ever find anything.
How do they get back if a trail is broken? If, for example, if they're all walking along a trail or a branch and you snip the branch in two, won't they have to double back on themselves? And if they do, will that mess up the instructions or the rules that they're following?
Oh, yes. Well, that's a very sophisticated question in a graph theory that has troubled computer scientists who think about how you search through a network, a data network, like when you decide to send a message to somebody else on Facebook. The system has that same problem of finding its way through this complicated network. And what happens if some node is broken? How does it get around it? So it has to go back to the nearest node. Think of a very complicated tangle of vegetation. Every branch, every place one branch touches another is a place where an ant has to decide which way to go. And if the path is broken, it has to go back to the nearest node and try some other path, some other branch that comes off from that node. And the turtle ants use a technique that in computer science is called greedy search. That is, they always go back to just the nearest node and try from there. And then they go to the nearest node to that and they try from there. And that's how they get around eventually to the other side. Of course, when ants one way make it to the other side, they will meet the ants coming the other way on the path. and they too will reinforce it. So that helps them more quickly reestablish a new path.
Right. We were talking about Simon Garnier's sort of deconstruction of the rules that ants, army ants follow to make bridges. Do you think you could quite easily code the behavior of, say, for example, turtle ants or harvester ants in a few lines that would give you the same sort of behavior, or are they surprisingly complex in the level of decision making they do? Because the way you describe it sounds very, very simplistic.
Yes, we've been able to write down an algorithm that seems to capture how the turtle ants make networks in the very complicated vegetation of the canopy of the tropical forest. So there are only two parameters, only two different variables that have to be tuned. One is the rate of decay of the pheromone, because the faster it decays, the more quickly ants have to come through to be able to keep up a trail. And the other is the probability of going off the trail, the probability of exploration or making a mistake, whatever you want to call it. We call it the probability of exploration. And we were able to measure both those things, and we found that by simulating the movement of ants through an abstract graph on the computer and looking at the real data, that they match up quite well, so that the rate at which ants are actually leaving the trail in real colonies matches up to the rate at which the algorithm does best on the computer.
Are there other ants that are much more complex that you've studied, or do many ants, because of the limitation of the neurons, have this sort of three rule behavior that actually turns into quite a complex system?
There are more than 14,000 species of ants, and only 50 of them have been studied very well. So whenever we say something is true of all ants, we're really guessing. But all of the ants that we have studied well turn out to use very simple rules to achieve their complicated regulation of behavior. So I think that it will turn out to be true of all ants that the rules are quite simple, and that they always involve some kind of noise or randomness that in the aggregate produces the finely tuned behavior of the colony.
Was there an experiment on the International Space Station that looked at ant behavior? What was the point of that study?
We were able to do an experiment on the International Space Station asking how ants perform collective search in microgravity. Collective search is a problem that ants face, but we also are very interested in solving that problem in robotics. For example, it's the problem of fire responders going into a burning building when they don't know who's in there and who needs to be rescued. And somehow they have to move around and cover all the space and find everybody as quickly as possible. So it's really the same problem that an ant colony faces when it has to search a tangled web of vegetation or anywhere. If every ant could possibly find something and they can eventually communicate once they find it, then they all want to move around to cover the ground as well as possible. And in collective search, there's a trade-off between thoroughness, that is searching very carefully locally, and extent, that is covering the whole area to be searched.
Yeah.
And we found that, for example, the invasive Argentine ant, which is invaded Mediterranean climates around the world, is really excellent at collective search. And they adjust the shape of their path to the numbers of ants. If there are many ants, they can each afford to be very thorough and stay locally searching around right where they are. But if there are only a few ants, then they need to stretch out their paths in order to cover the ground. And Argentine ants actually do this. It seems that they use the rate at which they meet. And if they meet other ants pretty often, they take a very random walk where they tend to get stuck in one place and they can search very thoroughly. But if the density of ants is low, they stretch out their paths more. So we tried this in microgravity with a different kind of ant, the pavement ant, which I think is quite common in cities everywhere, including in Ireland, those little black ants that are you see along the cracks in the sidewalk. And those are the ones that went to the International Space Station. And we did an experiment in which the ants were in a little arena searching around. And then the astronauts opened a barrier so that the same number of ants were in a larger space. And we looked to see if they would stretch out their paths when there were fewer ants in a larger space and they had to cover more ground. They did that to some extent, but they didn't do as well as they did in the same task on the ground. And that's fair enough. They haven't really evolved to deal with microgravity. What happened is that there's no gravity or very little gravity there in the International Space Station. So they were just floating there. And sometimes they would lose hold of the surface and kind of tumble around.
It sounds very cute.
Well, I was very impressed actually at how well they did and how good they were at grabbing back onto the surface, which is something that these particular kinds of ants, because they are always on flat ground, never climb anything. And so they somehow were able to revert to the use of these foot pads that all ants have, but these ants normally don't have to use very much to stick themselves back onto the surface in microgravity.
I started off by saying the ant in and of itself isn't very smart, but it seems like it has a lot to teach us nonetheless. Professor of Biology at Stanford, Deborah Gordon, thanks very much.
Thank you.